Let's get started. Another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired Word by opening to Leviticus chapter 19 once again. We're working our way through this rule book for the Levites because back in Numbers, when we were last there, they're getting ready at God's command to put all of the people with ceremonial uncleanliness outside the camp. And so we needed to see all the ins and out definitions of who would be in that group, either temporarily or long-term or maybe indefinitely. And so the Leviticus book is the place where all of those definitions are found. We are currently having a whole bunch of catch-all things here in chapter 19, and we'll be seeing some things repeated in a little bit. And among some of those things, by the way, are PG-13 things. So those of you that have the younger kids, Leviticus is not really the best of books for the preschoolers and kindergartners and the young elementary age. Too much stuff to have to be explained in detail. So get your kids of those younger ages busy somewhere else, and then you can come back and study this on your own. We are going to start in verse number 15 now. Leviticus 19:15. You shall do no injustice in court. Now, the rules that God is giving them are not just simply for getting along with each other out here in the wilderness on the way to the promised land. They are for how to live their lives once they arrive in the promised land. And there will be a justice framework set up and administered by the Levites, by some of the priests. They will be making the calls on what is fair and not fair according to God's standard. And so that's, again, another reason why we've got all these things in the book of Leviticus, which is the rule book for Levites. So absolute fairness is what needs to happen in these court systems. A little more detail. You shall not be partial to the poor or defer to the great, but in righteousness shall you judge your neighbor. So in the court, it doesn't matter whether the person is rich or poor, smart or uneducated, male, female, young, old. What matters is the rule. The rules have to be applied equally across the board. So it is not fair to be overly merciful, shall we say, to a poor person just because he's poor. And it is not fair to be overly critical of a rich person just because he's rich, or vice versa, to be super merciful to a rich person because he's rich and to be super hard on the poor person because he's poor. Everybody should get the exact same level of treatment. Verse number 16. You shall not go around as a slanderer among your people, so talking down people. You shall not stand up against the life of your neighbor. I am he who is. Now that last line there, I told you that gets repeated through a lot of these things because it's a reminder that everything is based on God's standard. The Israelis are supposed to be holy as God is holy. They're supposed to have that same standard of righteousness, the same standard of fair treatment, of love. And so God says, don't you dare go around talking down, telling bad things, false things, questionable things about other people in your community, because that's not fair. That's not right. And you don't get up in court and try to take your neighbor down, try to take somebody down by your testimony. This goes back to the Ten Commandments. Remember, includes that idea that you will not swear a false oath. You will not give false testimony. You'll not use the Lord's name in vain, those sorts of things. And so here is a reminder, when you go to court, you give the facts of the situation, and then the judge is going to weigh those things against the standard of God. Verse number 17, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. Now, several times we've talked about this idea of hate and love in the context of Scripture. And really, we should think of love as commitment and hate as non-commitment, not caring about. And so that is what's really being portrayed here, is you shouldn't take this negative attitude towards somebody else in the way you think about them and how you make your choices about them. Instead, it says, you shall reason frankly with your neighbor, lest you incur sin because of him. If you have an issue with some other human being, you know who you should be talking to? That other human being. You need to work it out. It doesn't do you any good to go and gripe and complain to somebody else about it. You need to go and talk to them. And that's exactly what it says here. You don't want to get involved in a sin situation. Either you sinning against them by not knowing all the facts and acting against them, or them getting all sinfully mad at you because you didn't explain the situation as you understood it. You know, a lot of times our disagreements are misunderstandings. And so it is always best to go and talk to the person. Verse 18, you shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am he who is. Now this is the source text, I think the original source text, for part B of the Great Commandment. Love he who is your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. That's part B. And so here you hear the fuller context of this. Don't try to get even with other people because of perceived slights against yourself. You don't take vengeance. You don't take the law into your own hands. And you don't just keep staying mad at them, you know, bearing the grudge. You need to get it worked out. It gets back to verse 17. You need to go and talk to him. Get this thing sorted out. Because the rule is you're supposed to care about that other person. You're supposed to be committed to what is best for them from God's standard. And you know that the biblical love, which is described quite well in Romans chapter 13, that type of love will sacrifice on behalf of the other person whatever it takes to help them out, because it's the type of love that God has for us. For God loved the world in this fashion, that he gave his one-of-a-kind Son, so that whoever would believe in him would not have to perish, but could have everlasting life. And Jesus says, no greater love has any man than this, that he lay down his life for his friends. And, of course, everybody is supposed to be a potential friend for us. We are not to hate anyone. And most definitely, we're not supposed to act against them. And you will see some New Testament passages that are right on top of this particular mindset. Verse number 19. You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle breed with a different kind. Now let's drill down into this and kind of take it apart and think about it. This is not talking about hybridization, where you take different types of cows and breed them to get another subgroup of cow, or the same thing with cats or dogs. The book of Genesis delineates the idea of kind by this manner. If they can interbreed, they are of the same kind. And so that is not what we're talking about then, hybridization. What we're talking about are animals that can't interbreed. The word here that's actually translated breed in our English Standard Version is actually the word lie down with. Now, it's a euphemism for having sex, which is why I think not just the English Standard Version, but other English versions have gone with the idea of breeding these animals. But I would say it's probably the more literal understanding. So you basically don't keep cows with sheep. And those of you that grew up like I did with the cartoons and the westerns and things like that from the 60s and the 70s, there was always something on either playing off of the idea of the fighting between the range wars between the sheepmen, the sheep herders and the cattlemen, or something making fun of that. In fact, I just saw a Droopy cartoon not too long ago that was making fun of that. But that's exactly what is intended here. The Israelis were not supposed to have mixed species herding going on. You kept your sheep with your sheep. You kept your cows with your cows. And this is part of the lesson of following God's instructions regarding distinguishing between one thing and the other to make sure that there's a clear line of that. And in other places, he will highlight that this is all about, I am holy, and you shall be holy. This is a little bit better illustrated by the next thing that he mentions. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed. So you don't go out there and throw a bunch of wheat and a bunch of barley in the same field. They were supposed to keep the grain stock specific to a field. Now, we here in North America kind of learned this idea of multiple crops in the same patch from the natives, where you'd have, I think it was corn with beans and pumpkins and things like that in one spot. This would have actually said, no, you can't do that. You're supposed to keep them separate. Again, it's not that there's something more immoral about putting sheep and cows in the same pen or putting pumpkins and corn in the same hole on the ground. It's the idea of following instructions about keeping things clearly distinguished. The last one is, nor shall you wear a garment of cloth made of two kinds of material. In particular, and this is illustrated in other passages, you don't wear an animal-based fiber, wool, mixed with a plant-based fiber, linen. You either wear cotton or you wear wool. You either wear linen or you wear wool. You don't have a blend between the two. Again, nothing immoral about it. It is just part of God's way of training the Israelis to distinguish between things that are different. Because this will be applied to, you don't mix non-believers with believers. And that is really the takeaway lesson for those of us in the New Testament era. Verse number 20. And this is a fine point of distinguishing that the judicial branch, the Levites would need whenever they were dealing with claims of sexual violations of the law. We already know, and it'll be brought up in a little bit again, that men and women who are not married to each other should not be having sexual relations with each other. It's supposed to be one man, one woman, together for a lifetime. Anything outside of those boundaries, like premarital sex, postmarital adultery, or polygamy, is supposed to be off limits. But here is what Moses is given from God about something that's a little borderline. If a man lies sexually with a woman who is a slave, now there is nothing here about violence. It seems to be a bilateral decision that they're going to be involved sexually. So it is consensual. So if a man lies sexually with a woman who happens to be a slave, so either she owed money and ended up going into slavery, or her family owed money and she ended up going into slavery, or maybe it's possible, I suppose, that she's a non-Israeli that was captured in some battle somewhere that will later happen. We know that that sort of thing does happen. The guy likes her and gets involved with her sexually. So the next line is the one that's a little confusing. Assigned to another man. Now, what it actually means is she is the slave of another human being, another man. He's the one that holds her indebtedness contract. And she's not yet ransomed or given her freedom. So that's a future event. So she is definitely a slave working for somebody else, which means she is not a free individual to make choices of being involved sexually. So what they've committed is not adultery, because she is not married to someone else, and she is not betrothed to someone else. She just happens to be a slave and owes her, her freedom is being held by someone else. So that's the distinction. And that's why it says, a distinction shall be made. So it's not technical adultery. They shall not be put to death because she was not free. So, yes, it was a violation of a relationship that existed. That is, she's a slave to another person. So it was a violation of that relationship, but it was not a violation of a marriage. So no death penalty, but, verse 21, there will be some required religious ceremony. He shall bring his compensation to he who is. Now the compensation is probably similar to what we saw in another passage where a young teenage couple, I always say teenage, but it could have been of any age, they were not married, they were not betrothed, but they get involved sexually, and the father and the mother of the woman say, no, we don't want our daughter marrying that guy. So the guy has to pay a dowry to the family anyway. And so more than likely, this guy has to pay some sort of damages or I'm sorry payment to the one who holds this woman's freedom in his hands. So he shall bring his compensation to he who is, to the entrance of the tent of meeting. And then here's the religious part of it, a ram for a guilt offering. The priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of the guilt offering before he who is for his sin that he has committed. So he has to probably make things right with the owner of the indebtedness contract of the woman. And he also has to make things right with God because he didn't restrain himself. And so he has this given, and his sin will be forgiven. And that's a good thing. And now he's got a fresh start. And I would not be a bit surprised then that in such a circumstance like that, that the man would then make arrangements to help pay off her indebtedness so that he could get married to her. And that everything will turn out okay if that's the case. Verse number 23. When you come into the land, so again, assuming we're in the promised land now, and you plant any kind of tree for food, so it could be a fruit tree, a nut tree of some sort, then you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. Now, the wording here is literally as if it were uncircumcised. The sense is that it's off limits. So for 3 years, it will be forbidden to you. It must not be eaten. So you plant a brand new tree. Apparently it's a sapling of some sort. And it doesn't matter whether it's producing fruit or not. Nobody gets to eat the first 3 years of the fruit. It's off limits. Everybody will have to keep an account of how they do this so they don't violate this. And then in the fourth year, all its fruit is going to be wholly an offering of praise to He who is. So in the fourth year after the planting of this fruit tree or this nut tree, everything you pick off of it goes straight to the priests, to the Levites. They'll be able to use it. It belongs to God, not to you. It's a sort of first fruits offering. And then, verse 25, in the fifth year, you may eat of its fruit to increase its yield for you. I am He who is your God. So this is going to help trees get a good start, probably in their production years, be a reminder to the Israelis that everything that goes on in the promised land is because of God. It's His land. It's His fruit tree. And so He is the owner of all. And so He has to be obeyed in His rules. Verse number 31. Do not turn to mediums or necromancers. Now, those are the English translations for us. The medium one, it's actually kind of a funny word. It's got something to do with the sound that a certain musical instrument makes. And it appears as if it's a reference to the voice change in someone that's channeling a spirit from the spirit world, how their voice seems to come from deep down in their body, not just simply the back of their throat. The necromancers one is, I think it's a little bit more specific. It's the idea of trying to learn something, find something out, but it's specifically in the spirit world. So both of these have the same object in mind. It is a foray into the spirit world where the fallen angels exist. That's a bad neighborhood is what I like to say. You never know who you're going to run across in there. Yes, the good angels live there. That is true. They move around in there. But we humans can't necessarily tell the difference at the beginning of a contact because the bad guys in that neighborhood are con men. or con angels. They are looking to fool us. And so basically the rule, both Old Testament and New Testament, is you don't go into the spirit world on purpose. You pray to God. You let God talk to you through His Word, but you don't actively try to go into that spirit world. So, do not seek them out, and so make yourselves unclean by them. I am He who is the Lord, your God. Okay? I am He who is. Verse number 32. I like this one because I have gray hair. And I am counted as an old man now at 64. You shall stand before the gray head and honor the face of an old man, and you shall fear your God. I am He who is. There needs to be honor of age, because rule of thumb, experience and wisdom comes with age. And so all of us are supposed to respect that. And I remember being younger, told that I needed to respect my elders, that I needed to stand up and show them honor and respect whenever I engaged in them, and not to treat them rudely. And so it's, I think, very good teaching that we're seeing here for the Israelis that can also be applied in our own situation. We're almost out of time, so I want you to mark your place for verse 33, where we're going to start talking about strangers. Stranger in this sense is someone that's not Israeli, someone that's not ethnic Israeli. So they are a foreigner, as we'd say, living in the land with the Israelis. And the Israelis were told to treat non-Israelis living in their land with respect and consideration.